Welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. We are roughly 3 weeks away from the NFL draft, and the Raiders, as you all know, they sent their first and second round picks to the Green Bay Packers for Davante Adams. However, there is so much more to talk about in this draft from so many different viewpoints. With me, one of our favorites, the man's family, the managing editor of Last Word on College Football, Tony Siracusa. Good evening, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing great, T-Biggs. How you doing?
Not bad, not bad. Now, when you look at the draft as a whole, we'll get into the Raiders question a little bit later. When you look at the draft as a whole, are you surprised to hear late names like Jermaine Johnson and Trevon Walker rise so quickly?
Not really, because I think what happens is, you know, you and I have been talking about some of the individual positions for, you know, probably 3-4 weeks now, right? And you look at, we talked early on about some of the positions where there was a lot of depth. And you look at some of these guys, now that there's been a whirlwind of trade and teams' needs are more defined, because just for instance, we talked about the Raiders and they needed a receiver and they needed help on the offensive line and they needed all of these things. But they went to the trade market before the draft market. Now that that has been completed, not just for the Raiders, but for so many teams, then you start to define the needs, and certain players, certain individuals, their draft stock tends to rise. Now, you combine that with the pro days that they've had at their school. And this week and last week, a lot of these guys are doing individual workouts for teams. So there's a lot of things that kind of, you see the pro day, but the individual workouts you don't see. So there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes that cause draft stocks to rise the way they do this late in the game.
Now, one of the things I've also noticed is where people were initially cool on the quarterback class, but it's starting to kind of heat up, where you have folks even in the third round, maybe the fourth, talking about Carson Strong from Nevada, but people are heating up on Malik Willis. Do you think that this is going to pan out where he went from a mid-20s pick where people are mocking him into the top 10?
Here's where I am with Malik Willis. He's very skilled, very gifted, had a great year at Liberty, and absolutely should be a top 20 draft pick. Where he goes beyond that, I get kind of divided on it myself, because here's what happens. He had a really great workout week at the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama. And then people raved about the game he had. But my thing was, hang on here. The guy was 2 for 4 for 11 yards passing. What you were impressed with was the 65 yards rushing. And that's swell, but you got to throw. You are still a quarterback first, and you 2 for 4 for 11 yards is a big whatever. However, then, when you watch him at the combine, he did really well. And again, they're drills without defensive backs, without a pass rush, so he did really well. But I still had a wait-and-see kind of attitude about him. From what I have heard of the pro day that he had and individual workouts where they are actually, you know, putting defensive backs on the receivers, moving him in the pocket, making him throw on the run, but throw downfield, he's doing really well. Look, he's got the arm strength, even for his smaller stature. He's got the arm strength and he can throw downfield. The question was always, but what about in a pass rush? What about when the receivers are covered? Because it wasn't really coming out in that way. But from what we've been told from some scouts I've talked to, that he looked really good in some individual workouts, and that includes in a pass rush.
I've also noticed that people are cooling off on Kenny Pickett, but Sam Howell is starting to catch a little steam. Are you surprised that people initially thought Pickett would be a mid-first, and now it seems like he's falling to the later part of first, and Sam Howell is starting to slowly build a little bit momentum?
I am a little surprised, particularly with Pickett, because I don't see anything different than what he was at Pitt. I mean, he got knocked at the combine for his hand size. Whatever. I get it. The pro football is marginally larger than a college football. I get it. But if he can throw, he can throw. And he threw well at the combine. He's done well in the individual workouts. What I'm sensing is that NFL teams are almost feeling like he was overrated before, so now they're going in the opposite direction. Not really with any substance to back it up. Not saying, oh, well, we've seen this in his game. We've seen that in his game. Look, you and I talked about the quarterbacks, and I said it was a good class of quarterbacks, but there's nobody elite in there. And I stand by that still. With regards to Howell, I've talked to his now old offensive coordinator, Phil Longo at North Carolina, and Phil raves about the guy. And he raves about his football knowledge, his ability to see the field. But one of the things I have questions about is how Howell did in the bigger games. And, you know, he did all right. He did fine, but he never took over a game against the bigger teams in the bigger games. And so I'm really not sure what there is that is going on that's elevating him.
I mean, I just, like you said, he's the exact same. Like, there's no added film. He turned himself into a very good college quarterback who might be a good NFL quarterback. I don't see where, folks are just, That's what I fail to see about some of these draft evaluations, not so much from the team standpoint, but from the analyst standpoint. There's such a diverse skill set from folks who analyze on TV and folks who work for teams. And I've always been surprised that they don't ever cross, or they don't tend to run along the same line, even though the people who do this for teams – literally, this is their job, is to help a franchise, where it's like being a weatherman. An analyst on TV can be wrong. They've been wrong a lot. No one gets affected, where a team, coaches get fired, GM get fired, owners get impatient. I just thought there'd be a little more of a congruent type of approach, but they run so
Mel
wide.
Yeah, Mel Kiper is wrong. If Mel Kiper is wrong, there's no repercussions other than, you know, Mel Kiper was wrong in whatever year. But if scouts are wrong, and I've spent a lot of time with scouts over the years when I was covering UCLA for Last Word on College Football, and now with being out in North Carolina and covering Wake Forest, and they had their pro day last week, and there were several scouts that I knew already that were there. And, you know, these guys put everything they've got into it because, like you said, it's their job, it's their livelihood, and if they miss, and the general manager misses because of the information from the scouts, or the coaches get it wrong, people are losing their jobs.
And they don't understand how, like, for me, I just wish that there's a little more of a kind of an approach where you see people who work for various networks who will throw out tropes, or who will throw out phrases that will garner attention but have no depth behind them. Now, speaking of a lack of I look at the running backs as a whole, and I'm like, like we talked about it. I like Breece Hall, as you do, but I really don't see too many more lead backs anymore in college. Like, as far as like 25, 30 carry guys, those days are long gone, and teams have adjusted. If you're a back in college, I would suggest some of the backs still in college learn to return punts, learn to return kicks, work on your hands.
I think that's very true. I think, especially if you are not even if you're the number one back, if you're not getting 25 to 30 carries a game, because, and it's not your fault, the offense doesn't work that way. The schemes don't work that way. The coach likes to, have running back by committee, whatever the case may be. You have to be able to show something else. That's true not only of running backs, but of wide receivers also. because, you know, look, if you're not one of the top six or seven wide receivers in the country in college coming into the draft, you've got to be able to do other things. And being a punt returner or a kick returner, I think is critical. And that's true for the running backs and the receivers, even a handful of tight ends, frankly. If you can't get in there and be on punt coverage or punt return, whether you're the returner or a blocker, you've got to be able to do something else. There's got to be something else to your game. Because I agree, look, the running backfield, you've got Breece Hall. I'm not sure Isaiah Spiller is a 30-carry-a-game guy or 25-carry-a-game guy. I think Kenneth Walker can be. But then there's a huge drop-off after that. I mean, that's three guys right there, you know. And then all of a sudden, you're looking at, like, Rashad White from Arizona State or James Cook from Georgia, and it's a pretty big drop-off.
Like, these are backs, if the backs, there are three, like you said, there are three backs who would merit a consideration, but then there are guys, theoretically, you could have either on day three or as an undrafted free agent, where for a running back to be considered in the first, 64 picks, you have to be outstanding. Like, you have to be beyond, you have to have no holes in your game and be good at just about everything.
And you have to be ready to go early. You have to be ready to show up in camp, ready to go, and frankly, ready to be no worse than the number two back on the team by the time the season starts. And there's not a lot of that at running back this year.
There's very little of that at running back. And, you know, when I shift towards the receivers, this is perhaps one of the better receiving classes that I can remember. Can you remember one just off the top of your head that has so much depth at receiver where teams, a dozen teams could possibly find anywhere between a number one receiver and a number three option?
Well, I think that's really true. I think there's a great deal of depth. I think that there is very high-end talent at the top, but that high-end talent at the top probably, to me at least, goes through the first 8, 9, 10 receivers that will come off the board. And then after that, you still have a lot of really good receivers that are going to come off the board. And you can easily, you could be all the way down in the late second, early third, even mid third round and still get a really good receiver. I mean, you know, when we did the receiver breakout, you know, I'm high on Drake London from USC. You know, I'm high on Garrett Wilson. But, you know, then you get a guy like David Bell from Purdue, who probably is no better than the 13th or 14th best receiver. And the guy was there for the Biletnikoff Award in college. But you go all the way down to, like, the Wandale Robinsons of Kentucky and guys like that. You can go all the way down to a Kyle Phillips from UCLA, who is one of the kinds of guys you just described. He's only about 6 feet tall, and so he's not going to burn you down the sidelines. He's very physically strong. He's like a Hunter Renfro kind of receiver, but he was also one of the leading punt returners in the Pac-12 because he had to do that other thing to get seen at the next level.
And you mentioned guys like Phillips. You also mentioned there's guys like Velus Jones of Tennessee, guys like Bo Melton at the far back end, who
– right.
Charleston Rambo, guys at the very back of this draft who will be doing different things to make their way into a roster where, example, you have a guy in Matthew Slater from the Patriots. Perhaps the greatest special teamer to have ever lived. Probably on his way to the Hall of Fame as the first special teams standout. But former receiver had to make his way on the team. Where because of the talent that is there at receiver now, if a team that needs one doesn't come away from one with this draft, they might need to fire the entire front office. Because it is literally, you will fall into a receiver.
Yeah, look, there's a guy at Wake Forest, or who just finished at Wake Forest, Ja'Cory Roberson, and he frankly got kind of hosed over. He should have gotten an invite to the combine. He was, you know, more than 1,000 yards receiving in a receiver's room that went five deep. And yet he had those kinds of great numbers, but he didn't get to the combine. He had the pro day last week in Winston-Salem, burned a 4.440, looked fantastic, but he is a receiver only. There is no game film of him on special teams. Now, you know, that's going to bump him down this list. Does he belong on the list? Absolutely. He should go fourth, fifth round. But again, to your point, you've got a 1,000-yard receiver who you can go get, you know, mid to late fourth round in this draft.
And it, to me, is always going to be interesting, and I always like the fact that the draft, you have a guy like Christian Watson who has just shot up the draft boards out of North Dakota State, and, you know, people are looking at the Missouri Valley Conference like, oh, it's a thing. But people don't realize that schools are leaving the Ohio Valley Conference, left, right, and center, to join the Missouri Valley Conference. And the Missouri Valley Conference is probably going to be the SEC of the FCS soon. When we come back from break, I want to delve into more draft stuff, more topics, and maybe a couple of spins around the world of the Raiders and some Wake Forest stuff. But that's after we come back. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Tony Saracusa from Last Word on College Football. Tony, when you look at the Raiders, like I mentioned, they sent their two top picks, or their first and second, to Green Bay for Davante Adams. What have you seen, or what do you think that rounds three through seven would be able to help them round up this roster?
You know, I think one of the things we talked about earlier and have talked about consistently while we've been doing this series is the Raiders, frankly, have a lot of needs. And one of them was receiver, and they traded draft picks to get Adams. And the other glaring one was offensive line. And I think that you can still get some good offensive line help in the draft, even though you're not picking until the third round. Look, you've got Colton Miller and you've got Andre James, and they're the cornerstones of the offensive line now, but you need more bodies, and you're working with the 86th overall pick. So most of what is getting talked about as the high end or elite offensive linemen in the draft will be gone by then, but there is enough talent. There's enough good talent to go around and get yourself some decent help. I think, you know, if you look at a guy like Jeremy Sullier from Georgia, you know, the reviews for him have been kind of all over the board. But I think you can get him late third round. And I think that, you know, when you look back at his game film, look, he's very mobile. He's got good footwork. His techniques are good. So the things that he's getting knocked on are not techniques, and they're not work ethic. It's that, you know, he spent parts of two years on the bench with injury. But, you know, I think that he can be had there. I think if you're really lucky, I don't think Sean Ryan is going to last to the mid to late third round. I think he probably goes early third round. But the guy is ready to start in the NFL at either tackle position. So I think that that's got to be an option. Also, I think you look at Zach Tom from Wake Forest. He may go a few spots earlier than what the Raiders have. But, you know, look, a little turn of luck, and he's still sitting there because he's a third-round pick. It's a question of whether he goes mid-third round or late third round. There were two questions about him coming out of Wake Forest and going into the combine, and it was his weight and his bench press reps. Well, he's put on 12 pounds in muscle mass since the end of the season. We talked to him last week, and the scouts were really happy with that and with his production in the weight room. And he didn't do a lot of on-field drills because he had a really good combine and got really good reviews from the combine, so he didn't need to do a lot. But I know that he's got a couple of individual team workouts that are coming his way this week. And so, you know, teams are giving him a good look, but there's so many offensive linemen that it's easy to see him dropping to mid third round through no fault of his own, other than just it's a numbers game. And if he's available, then I think that's the one the Raiders have to go get.
Now, I agree. And I look at the Raiders roster where, yes, they have improved it greatly, but depth in certain spots where you have – they have three receivers, well, at least two in Adams and Renfro. I'm not sold on Bryan Edwards. Now, if you are Josh McDaniels and you're looking at, like as we talked about, later round guys who can do more than one thing, as far as – like, if we look towards return guys who can play the positions, are there any returns in this draft that you think the Raiders should look at?
You know, I think that there are a couple of guys who can do several things. And, you know, I mentioned a guy like a Kyle Phillips out of UCLA. But, frankly, the Raiders already have him in Renfro. So, you know, it's a little bit of a repeat there. But I think you can go to a guy like a Trey Turner from Virginia Tech, who, you know, you're going to be able to get later on in the draft with a draft pick. To me, I'm still using that third round pick for some offensive line help. But if you're looking at receivers, you can also do someone like a Danny Gray out of SMU, who didn't return kicks all the time, but did do it part of the time. That was just really a coaching decision more than whether he could or couldn't, because I've covered SMU. I've seen Danny Gray up close and personal, and he absolutely can. And he ran a 4.33 40 at the combine. So I think that you're going to be able to get him, you know, third round, fourth round, somewhere in there, and he's going to be very productive.
Now, as we switch gears, and now that you are covering Wake Forest to me is the most business-like team in the ACC, where, like we mentioned before, they have guys who stay 4 years. They come in, they get better, they go, and they leave, but yet they consistently are starting to win. And it may not be the prettiest thing in the world, but it is efficient. What have you noticed about the culture of just the professionalism at Wake?
That's an interesting take, the professionalism at Wake, because it really is a business atmosphere there. You know, having been there for about 3 weeks worth of spring camp at this point, you see guys like, to your point, guys who could have left but came back, and you look no farther than the quarterback, Sam Hartman, had 4,000 passing yards last year and 39 touchdowns, could easily have left. You know, and he'd be talked about not at the top of the draft, but in the Sam Howell kind of part of the draft. But because he's the clear leader of the team. I mean, you talk to other players about him and they'll tell you, look, you could be his roommate or a guy that he barely knows. But if you do it wrong on the field, you're going to hear it from him. You don't even have to hear it from the coaches. You're going to hear it from him because of the expectation levels. You have a lot of guys who have come back when they could have left. They could have done other things. There is, and I think part of that is you look at the roster last year. Look, Wake Forest had got to the level where it was a 7-win or 8-win team, you know, on a routine basis under Dave Clawson. Then last year, they went 11-3, and they won the ACC Atlantic, and they won the Gator Bowl and all these things. Where they are now is, can they continue that? I mean, it's one thing to have that 1 year, but now you need consistency, and you're going to have to step up your game to do it. You can't count on Clemson being down multiple years. Clemson wasn't even, frankly, that down in terms of a college football standpoint. They were down by the standards everybody else has set for Clemson and what they've set as a staff there, but it really wasn't that bad of a year. You got to figure at some point, DJ Uiagalelei is going to step up for Clemson, or they're going to replace him, and the offense is going to kick into gear. The one thing that you see with Wake Forest as a response was the offense was really good last year, put up big numbers, particularly in between the 20s. You look at inside the red zone, they were very efficient, but you look at how many points they were putting up outside of the red zone, big runs, big pass plays with guys like Roberson and A.T. Perry. It was the defense that was letting them down or making games closer than it was. Their defense was 91st overall in the country in terms of yards giving up. And Clawson didn't mess around. The defensive coaching staff was gutted. They brought in a new defensive coordinator, Brad Lambert, who was at Purdue last season. And Purdue had a really good defense last season. And Lambert has a history at Wake Forest. He'd been there for about a decade in the early 2000s. He brought over Glenn Spencer as a new linebacker coach from South Florida. And then James Adams, who was also at Purdue as a new defensive backs coach. So they're kind of like, Clawson almost gets the fact that more is expected of us now. When we talked to him last week, he said, you know, look, we know based on last year, no one's taking us for granted. No one's assuming they're going to come into Winston-Salem and win. We are now going to get better performances and better preparation from other teams of the conference, which means we have to step up our game. So it is, like you said, it is very businesslike. He had a theme last year, which was, and I'm paraphrasing, that you have to go from good to great. He said, you know, we got to really good. I'm not sure we got to great, but we got to really good, the best the Wake Forest has had in well over a decade. Now it's about mindset, which is leaving that behind. You've enjoyed it and you remember it, but you leave it behind because there's business to be done now.
I mean, for me, I look at Wake and they had Carlos Basham and Duke Ejiofor the last couple of years as far as pass rush, where these guys, if you watch on film from the time they are a freshman to the time they leave, you see not just incremental steps, but big steps taken as far as technique and awareness. Wake Forest has become a teaching school where, as you know, some of these schools tend to rely on the players' natural gifts and just say go make plays without trying to equip them with a knowledge base to be able to handle when they age or they're injured and try to push through it. Where, to me, I see Wake Forest like this. If the ACC were a high school and, you know, Wake is the above average athlete that just works hard, goes through it, you see like other schools who may be a little more talented, but when they leave high school and then they age and, you know, they age and time takes its toll on all of us, they lose all of their athletic ability. Wake is still sitting there, you know, at the same level. Now they look like a supreme athlete because they kept their nose to business. I think that it is, whenever Carolina plays them, I am always afraid because I'm never convinced they're going to ever win. Because if Wake hangs around in the game, they're going to win because they may not have all the speed, but they have the ability to adjust, and you don't see them get rattled.
Yeah, and I think that's a byproduct of what you see Clawson putting them through in training camp. You know, there's no wasted time. They've got the clock running on every segment of practice, and every minute is spoken for. Look, they had a player hit the transfer portal yesterday, Chase Monroe, and it was a big deal because it doesn't happen that often with the Wake Forest program. You know, you've got some programs that lose 12 players and pick up another 10. Wake Forest has not been what we would call a newsmaker in the transfer portal because they haven't lost that much to the portal. So they really don't have a lot of room to be picking people up. I mean, they lost a third stringer yesterday. It's basically what it amounts to. And that's no different than any other school. When you get towards the end of spring camp, that has become the active part of the transfer portal because guys get an assessment of where they fit in the rotation for their position and start to look elsewhere. So I think over the next 2 to 3 weeks, there's going to be a lot more news nationally, you know, across the board in the transfer portal. But Wake's not really much of a newsmaker because they're not really losing much to the portal. You don't see players walking out. What you see is a lot of you know, third year seniors, guys who are in their third year on the field, but academically are already seniors because they've progressed academically. You see a lot of guys who are fourth year players. You see a guy like Zach Tom who stayed his entire time and has an MBA, you know, aside from being a highly regarded recruit for the NFL. So it is definitely a business-like atmosphere out there.
How can people interact with you on social media?
Absolutely. We've got lastwordoncollegefootball.com, which is the website for all of our writers out there across the country covering spring camps and all the teams they cover. There is a Facebook page for that. There is the Twitter feed, which is at lastwordoncfb. And for me personally, even though I made the trek cross country, I did not change my Twitter handle from Tony Bruin. I did not change it to Demon Deacon Tony or anything like that. It is still at Tony Bruin, only because I've had it for so long, it's just easier. And that's how people can find me.
One of the sharpest minds in not just the podcast world, but in the media world, Tony Siracusa from Last Word on College Football. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Always happy to do it.
This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.